Good morning, boys. Thank you for joining us. The topic, if you saw in your packet, in the youth edition packet, we tried to make it an example which would be more relevant to age-appropriate example. But the case which we're going to see as we go along, these are cases which deal with, on a practical level, a person's in the workforce, this is going to be an ongoing issue. A person is a rabbi, this is going to be an ongoing issue. Person sits down on a bus next to somebody, it's going to be an ongoing issue. This is an issue which is constantly relevant in your lives. If you looked at your packet, I don't know whether you had time to look in the packet in the back, there's a story there. I want to start with the story. So if you didn't get a chance to read the story, I'll tell you the story, the source of the story. I heard this from my Rosh Hashiva, Reb Gifter, Zichli Bracha. That's where I heard the story from. And the person it took place with was a person named Reb Aaron Paperman. Reb Aaron Paperman and Reb Gifter were harusas together in Tel's Yeshiva in Europe, in the city of Tel's. 1933, Reb Gifter went to Europe and they met up again. They're both from Baltimore. Rabbi Paperman went before Rabbi Gifter. He was there already when Rabbi Gifter came. And they were chavrusas together. And many years later, Rabbi Paperman used to come back every year to Cleveland's fundraise, as we'll see in the story. And he would spend the week in yeshiva and learn with Rabbi Gifter the chavrusa again. So one time, Rabbi Gifter told us over this story. So Rabbi Paperman learned in Tel's Yeshiva in Europe for 6 years. And one of the things about Tel's Yeshiva, I learned in Tel's Yeshiva, Rabbi Anna Rizotzal learned in Tel's Yeshiva, was it's very important to only say the emes. That was a major thing that they made, a major stress on the idea of only speaking emes, acting emes. So imagine, let's say somebody tells you a story that you've never heard before, but you don't want to seem stupid and you never heard the story before, so what do? You nod your head. Well, you're nodding your head, you never heard the story before. I know that story. Because you want people to think that you know it. That's not emes. That's not true. Because you don't really know that story. Excuse me. So this was the message of the yeshiva for many years. He's leaving this yeshiva and he's going back to America. America in the 1930s and 1940s was a land where people were not staying with hermits. They were going another direction. And as yeshiva told him, when he left Europe, his yeshiva in Europe, Rabbi Avraham Yitzchak Bloch, told him the following. He says, America is the land of compromise. You know, some almost keep Shabbos, you sort of keep Shabbos, you sort of do this, sort of do that. You want to be sort of like part of the crowd. But it's not emes. It's not sheker, but it's not emes. So he comes back to America. He was American. He eventually joined the U.S. Army. He was a chaplain in the U.S. Army. He went to Europe during the war. He was there, actually. He was one of the liberators of Buchenwald. He was one of the soldiers who went in to Buchenwald. So they saw a frum Jewish face. And he was able to speak to them in Yiddish. Came back to America, and he ended up joining Tel's Yeshiva, which had by that point in time. I'm sorry. I was in Cleveland this morning. I think I might have left my voice in Cleveland. So he joined Tel's Yeshiva, which had reestablished itself in America. And he became a very effective fundraiser for the yeshiva. And he made friends with the people in the community, which were not necessarily Orthodox, and they were supporting the yeshiva. One of the major supporters of the yeshiva passed away. Conservative person. And the funeral was going to take place in a conservative shul. The psak of the rabbanim of that time was that an Orthodox Jew cannot go to a service, a religious service in a conservative shul. Can't go to a funeral, can't go to a wedding, can't go to davening. So he can't go to the funeral. This person was a supporter of the yeshiva. So besides the fact that he might stop supporting the yeshiva, he felt a chorus of tithe to the person. So what should he do? But he felt if he would go, that's going to be a compromise. That's going to be a peshara. So he went, and he stood outside. He went to the Levaya, did not go inside the building. So he came to show his respects, but he stood outside. And he figured, that's it. He did his what he's supposed to do, but the family's never going to talk to him again. He went to Menachem Oval, and he did not know what to expect. He's walking into the house, they might, yell at him, and they might call him names. You insulted us. You hurt our feelings. You didn't come walk into the building. We had this funeral, my father's funeral. You didn't come to the funeral. You stood outside. It'd be very insulting. And they did not know what to expect. And the, he walks in. One of the sons says to him, says, "Rabbi, we were watching what you were going to do. We were wondering what you're going to do. We knew the dilemma. We knew the problem. We were wondering, what are you going to do? Are you going to come inside or not? We knew that you keep halacha. Halacha said not to come inside. We knew that. And we're waiting to see what you're going to do. If you would have walked inside, Rabbi, that means that our money is more important than your principles. We don't respect people who think money is more important than principles. You would never have seen a penny from us again. Because you stood outside and you stood by your principles. We respect that. We'll be friends with you for life." And they continue to this day, to the family, the grandchildren, to support, tell the yeshiva. They now actually have members of the family, which are frum. One of them actually learned here in the yeshiva high school. A few years ago, a long time ago, I guess, probably by now. And I think it's part of the schus that they continue to support Torah, but the person stood up for what is them. So the question is, how far does this go? So you saw the story in your packets of the story of Agrippa HaMelech. So Agrippa HaMelech was from the family of Hordas. Hordas was not Jewish, he was a slave. He was a slave. And Hordas killed out all the Chachamim, all of the family base of Chashmonaim, and he became the king. He claims that he married the daughter of the Chashmonaim. They freed him and he married the daughter of the Chashmonaim. And the Moran Bava Asher says it was not true. She went up to the roof before that happened because he was going to claim that. She knew that. And she made a public announcement. Anybody who claims that anybody's from Beis Hordas, you should know that they are slaves. Because I'm the last person of Beis Chashmonoi and I'm going to die. And she throws herself off the roof and she dies. Excuse me, she dies. So there's nobody left. So he was really a slave. He's the king. He was actually a person who kept halacha. And there was halacha that once every 7 years they would gather together in the Beis Hamikdash and the Melech would read. He's reading these psukim, and it says that to be the king on Klal Yisrael, to be a person of authority in Klal Yisrael, you have to be Jewish. A person who's a ger cannot be, even a person who's a ger cannot be appointed to a position of authority in Klal Yisrael. So he realized he's not kosher to be the king. So he said a krat. He wants to be the king. So what happened? So Chum said, "Achinu Atzo, you're our brother because your mother is Jewish." Now, for most positions of authority, that's sufficient. But not to be the king, Tarsus says. To be the king, you need both the mother and the father have to be Jewish. So he was not kosher to be the king. Why do they say that to him? Why do you think they say that to him? What were they afraid of if they wouldn't say that? Yes, sir.
A king has the power to kill people, so if they say something against him, he can do it.
So theoretically, they were there afraid that they might get killed. So you think that was a good answer? Yes.
If he technically wasn't considered king, then wouldn't he not have the power to kill him?
Okay. So the question is, he's the king. So the king has the power to kill. The king's power to kill is because he has an army. The halachic power to kill and the actual power to kill are two different things. But they were scared of not the halachic power to kill, but the actual power to kill. Now, he was a person who kept halacha. So were they really scared of being killed? Were they really scared of being killed? So the Tarsus says, no, they weren't scared of being killed. Had they been afraid that they're going to be killed, it would have been mutter to what they did. But they were not scared of being killed, Tarsus says. However, the Ben Yonah says that that's the case. They were scared of being killed. And they did it, and the Mora says it was still wrong. Even if it's a question of saying that something is mutter when it's usser, saying something is acceptable when it's not acceptable, is distorting Torah. You can't distort Torah. You can't misrepresent Torah. There's a story later on, which another Gemara, the Mora says like this. How many of you learned the halachas, parshas mishpatim, the halachas of a short time and a short mu'ud? If an animal which is gored the first time, animal is gored three times, right? So the first time animal gores, Reuven's animal gores Shimon's animal, He pays Katsi Nezik. He pays half of the damages. Second time, half of the damages. Third time, half of the damages. Fourth time, pays Nezik Sholeh. Okay. There's one opinion that says it's not like that, but that's okay. What about if this Jewish animal, a Jewish-owned animal, gores a non-Jewish-owned animal, or vice versa? What's the luck over there? It's a little more complicated. So the luck is, if a Jewish-owned animal versus a non-Jewish-owned animal, you know the answer?
Then they don't have to pay.
So if a Jewish-owned animal, of course, a non-Jewish-owned animal, they don't have to pay at all. What about if a non-Jewish-owned animal gores a Jewish-owned animal? First time. All right? So the young man over here is going to tell me that he pays
full price.
So the Morris says a story that the Roman government sent ministers to learn Torah from the rabbis. And they came to this halacha. So they came to the halacha. So the halacha is you're sitting with this non-Jew who's a Roman minister who has the power to kill you. And he says, so what's the halacha when a non-Jewish animal gores a Jewish animal? Says Nezik Sholeh. What's the halacha when a Jewish animal gores a non-Jewish animal? Says doesn't have to pay at all. Now I ask you boys, if you'd be in that situation, what would you say? You're sitting with this fellow who has this big long spear, right, and a sword, and probably a knife also, right? And he's a Roman minister, and they were into killing. They like that. They were into that stuff. And he's sitting right next to you. And he asks you, so what's the halacha when a Jewish one and a non-Jewish one, you know, what happens? They say, well, the Jewish one, does the non-Jewish one, he doesn't have to pay at all. Other way, he has to pay the full amount. Would you say that? What would you do? Would you be worried about your life?
Yes.
Yes. What would you say?
I would say...
I don't know, right? I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe ask you an easier question, right? We might say that. So what else? So what would you say?
I would say, I don't know, ask the head rabbi and bring it to him. And then he'll have to decide what he wants to do.
Okay, they were the head rabbis. That was the problem. This was the
common. The header rabbi. Yeah.
The header rabbi. Okay. Right.
Whoever's like the most smart out of all.
Most of us would have said, I don't know. Maybe they would have said a different answer, but it's a question of your life. But they gave the true answer. So the Rochelle says, why? Why did they do that? Because distorting Torah is like denying Hashem's Torah. You cannot deny Hashem's Torah even by threat of death. So there's a halacha, law later, should never be tested. A person, the guy walks over to the Jew and says, are you Jewish? If you are, I'm going to kill you. We should never live through such things when that happened during the war. The halacha is you have to say that you're Jewish. Okay, so the Chachamim didn't give that answer. The Mora says that's called chanifus. So what is chanifus? Chanifus means to say something is acceptable when it's not acceptable. So the example you had in your introduction, right? Reuben is the team captain. Reuben's the team captain. And somebody asked to be, Dalman says he wants to join the team. Reuben says, you're a horrible player. Then he turns to Shimon and he says, I really said it to him good, right? What are you allowed to say? What do you say? You're allowed to say yes? Who thinks you're allowed to say yes? Okay. Who thinks you're not allowed to say yes? Okay. Who is not sure what you're supposed to say? Okay. You're not allowed to say yes. That I think everybody will agree. You can't say yes because it's not true. What he did was wrong. It was called, what a error is that? What a error is that? He insulted somebody publicly. What a error is that? Insulting somebody publicly is a nos devorim. It's hurting somebody with words. Right? So, can't do that. So, good. They didn't do that. Can you say, I don't know? Maybe. So, let's change the scenario, okay? Let's up the scenario. This is a story which happened. Right? Some bosses, some managers are not very nice people. And they like to throw their power and their authority around. So you're new. You've just been hired by the company. You're there for 2 weeks. You walk into the office, and the manager of the office gets upset at one of the workers there. There's like 25 people in the office, And he really lets him have it publicly. He calls him names and he insults him and he says, "You're stupid," is it? Right? Then he turns to you and says, "I got him good, didn't I?" Now you realize if you say yes, you keep your job. If you say no, you don't keep your job. And you haven't had a job for 3-4 months, and you have to pay the mortgage, and you have to pay for food. And what do you say? This is a true story. Somebody ready to say, what can you say? Yes.
Say I wasn't listening.
Say I wasn't listening. Okay.
That's not good either.
Can you say yes? Can you say yes? Who believes you can say yes? Nobody believes you can say yes. Do you have to say no? You have to get up and say, "No, what you did was wrong, and you're a horrible person, and you just, did you have to do that?"
No.
Yes. Okay. So the answer is that you do not have to say no. You don't have to get up and tell them no. You could say, "I wasn't listening. I don't know. I wasn't involved. I wasn't focused." You could say that, but you can't lie. You can't lie. That's only true if you weren't listening and focused, etc. You're not allowed to lie. That check. But you don't have to tell him. You can't say yes. You don't have to tell him no if you find another way to say it, which is true. If you don't find another way to say it, which is true, you can't lie, and you can't say that it's okay. You just say, you can say it's not acceptable. Let's say your life would be in danger in that situation. That'd be a very dangerous boss, right? Right? Then the Torah says, then you're allowed to say it's okay. Then you're allowed to say it's okay. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the following question. There's a community. There was a Jewish doctor who was not frum. The Jewish doctor was married to a non-Jewish woman. He would come to shul every Shabbos. They would not give him an aliyah. They would not give him sicha. They would not give him any type of kibbutz in the shul. This doctor did a lot of favors to the people in the community. And they were afraid if they don't give him some type of kibbutz, some type of honor in the shul, he would stop doing those favors to the people in the community. So they wanted to know, are they allowed to give him an aliyah? Are they allowed to give him psicha to the Oren? Are they allowed to give him hagba, galila? What are they allowed to do? Are they allowed to do anything? So Rashi says he can't get an aliyah. He can't get an aliyah. But he can get psicha, get hagba, and get galila. But it's a question of chanifis over here. If you do that, you are saying that it's okay to do this. It's okay to be married to a non-Jewish woman. Are you allowed to say that it's okay to be married to a non-Jewish woman? A Jewish woman, man, married to a non-Jewish woman. Are you allowed to say that it's okay?
No.
No. You're allowed to go to an intermarriage. You're allowed to attend the wedding. What do you think?
No.
If I attend the wedding, I'm saying it's a wedding. It's a celebration. Your last year, Rabbi. Right? The Pesachim, most Pesachim is you can't go. Because you are stating, by going, and saying that it's acceptable to do this.
Is that from the Chopim, or even from the...
Ask a Rabbi. I'll tell you a story. That I had a relative who married a non-Jewish woman. A relative married a non-Jewish woman, and I did not go. I wrote him a letter explaining why I'm not going. I did not go. Another relative who's not from was very upset at me. Why just can't you just live and let live? That's the American phrase. You know, everything's okay. You know, you do whatever you want. You want to be Orthodox, that's fine. He wants to be not Orthodox, that's also fine. Everything is fine. Do whatever you want, and you should respect his decisions. Okay, so what would you answer that question? This is what the person was very upset at me. I remember we were standing in the kitchen. I was by a family get together a little bit afterwards. Like, why did you do that to him? You made him feel so bad. Why are you not like that? And why are you, why can't you just be more accepting and tolerant, etc.? That's what she asked me. So I said the following. You want to give an answer? I'll tell you my answer first, and you'll tell me afterwards if you agree, okay? So I said the following. I said, we do not disagree. The two of us are not disagreeing. We both feel the exact same way. We are not tolerant, and we do not accept. If you would see that relative of ours about to take his hand and put it into the fire, what would you do? She said, I would grab it away. I don't understand. Live and let live. Let him do whatever he wants. It's just be tolerant and accepting. Because you don't want him to hurt himself. Oh, okay. So what you're saying is that when it's a damage which you can recognize, you want to help him not hurt himself. So I also say the same thing. We only argue, is there such a thing as spiritual damage? You say there's no such thing as spiritual damage. I say that there is. But we both agree that when there's spiritual damage, or there's physical damage, or there's damage, you do not want that person to have that damage. So we do not believe in being tolerant and accepting. We all believe it's important to help somebody not hurt themselves. We argue what the definition of hurting themselves is. So let's get the argument clear what we're talking about. I'm not tolerant, and you're not tolerant either. That changed the subject, and that was the end of the conversation. Is that what you would have said? Okay.
I would have said, I'll respect his decision, and you should respect mine.
Good line. I like that. So I had a story. I had a story. A friend of mine was on a plane, flying back from Eretz Israel to America, and next to him was a Israeli woman, not from a professor in Princeton, sitting next to him eating a ham sandwich. So she realized that she's sitting next to a rabbi. It looks like a rabbi. She says, "If I realized I'm sitting next to a rabbi, I would not have ordered a ham sandwich." So he said, "Doesn't bother me." She said, "What?" He says, "I'm not holding by the level that bothers me that you're eating a ham sandwich. I'm not, honestly." He said, "But I have to tell you a story. It did happen to me." It wasn't a true story, but he said it was a true story until she realized it. He says, "My brother won a lottery ticket." What a lottery. Won $1 million in lottery. And he took the lottery ticket and he ripped it up. And I was so angry at him that he ripped up the lottery ticket. Because he lost $1 million with that by doing that. I was so upset about it. She says, "Yeah, I'd also be upset." She says, "What about a person who takes 3,000 years of tradition and rips it up? Isn't that person hurting themselves? I'd be so upset at them they're hurting themselves." That's what he said to the woman. So Moshe was asked, can they do that? So Moshe said the following. This person did a lot of favors for the Jewish community. Are you allowed to respect that? What do you say?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. When you give him psicha to the Aaron, are you saying that it's acceptable to marry a non-Jewish woman? Are you saying that he does a lot of favors to people? I want to respect that. What are you saying? I don't know what you're saying. You didn't say what you're saying. It's not obvious what you're saying one way or the other. So Moshe says, if it's not obvious what you're saying, then it is mutter. If you have a valid reason to give him respect because he does favors to people, you want to respect him for that? Fine. But you cannot say what he's doing is acceptable. That you cannot do. That would be distorting Torah, and that would be usur. It would be usur to the point that you have to give up your life not to distort Torah. But if all you're saying is it's acceptable, that I respect him for the favors he does. He's a doctor, does a lot of favors to people. Late at night, he helps people. Right, you call him up, he helps you. That's very respectable. I respect that point. That's mutus. That was what Moshe said. Okay, everybody, so thank you for joining us. So I think if you take some of these thoughts, you'll see, going back to our back to the playground, back to the basketball court, back to the baseball field, right? What should you do? Give us some real thought. This is a mitzvah of the Torah. It's a veir of the Torah. To say something's acceptable when it's not. You have to have the strength to stand up and say that I fear Hashem more than I fear this guy next to me. So I won't be part of the team this time. So they might make fun of me a little bit. You know what? I know that I'm doing the right thing. That's what we're asking you to do. And that's what the Torah is asking you to do. That's something which we have to grow into, work on ourselves to be able to do the right thing. Thank you for joining us. Have a good morning.